Brother Eric John Phelps coming to you today, continuing the second of three broadcasts regarding Gaza, the right of the Jews to Gaza, and the history behind it, to the reaching the conclusion that not only do they have the right to the land, but the government of Israel works for the Pope to the detriment of the Hebrew Jewish Israelites living in that land of Israel. I wish to show you that the establishment of the nation of Israel in 1948 was in fact the reestablishment of the Latin kingdom of Jerusalem that fell at the siege of Acre in 1291. And it's quite intriguing to remember that Napoleon Bonaparte, when he was in Acre, advised by his Jesuit coadjutor, Abbe Sayas, who was the second consul of the consulate, called for a Hebrew or a Jewish state. So Napoleon Bonaparte is really the first to openly advocate the establishment of a Jewish state for the Hebrew Jewish Israelites in quote-unquote Palestine or in Acre. The Jesuits have always wanted the reestablishment of the nation of Israel. They've always wanted the building of a third Hebrew temple. They regard the two most important cities of the world to be Jerusalem and Babylon, according to the great works of Wiley in his works, three-volume set, The History of Protestantism. I now wish to take you to the prophecy of Ezekiel stating that during the diaspora, as I read to you in the first broadcast here, that the Hebrew Jewish Israelites would be gathered back to their land in a condition of unbelief in preparation for the coming time of Jacob's trouble, which is the last 3.5 years of the 70th week of years of the prophet Daniel, as per Daniel 9:27, that is yet future, by the way. We are biblical futurists in that we read the Bible literally, and we distinguish between the church and Israel. And when you read it literally, you come up with this conclusion. The church has not replaced Israel, and there's nothing allegoric about the prophecy of Daniel chapter 9, verses 24 to 27. It's all literal. Most of it's been fulfilled. The last verse of chapter 9 and verse 27 has yet to be fulfilled. So I wish to take you now to Ezekiel 38 and read to you a verse showing you that during this time of their diaspora, that the Hebrew Jewish Israelites in their unbelief, as they're blinded by God for their rejection of their Messiah, and this is a generational blindness, it's in the genes. We read in Ezekiel chapter 38, verse 8, "After many days thou shalt be visited, in the latter years thou shalt come into the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel, which have been always waste, but it is brought forth out of the nations, and they shall dwell safely, all of them." This is a prophecy concerning Gog of the land of Magog. He's the Rush prince, chief prince Rush prince of Meshech, Moscow, and Tubal-Tobolsk. And this is a time when Russia will invade Israel during the 70th week of Daniel, because it's during the first 3.5 years that the nation is at peace. It's not at peace today. It's never been at peace since 1948. But there's coming a future day that the nation of Israel will have a temporary peace, and the Arab-Israeli conflict will be ended by virtue of a covenant. In Isaiah chapter 28, verse 14 through 18, we read, "Wherefore hear the word of the Lord, ye scornful men that rule this people which is in Jerusalem." These men that rule Jerusalem are unbelieving men. They scorn at God, they scorn at his word, And this is the typical labor Zionist, Masonic Jewish labor Zionist, that have run the nation of Israel. Whether you call it labor Zionism or Likud, they're all the same high-level Jewish Freemasons subject to the Pope. They are scornful men. And we say that rule this people which is in Jerusalem. Remember, Jerusalem, 60% of all the land in Jerusalem is owned by the papacy. And I was told that by an Israeli realtor in person when I was there in Jerusalem many years ago. The Pope owns Jerusalem. He controls the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount was deeded to the papacy in 1993, according to an Italian newspaper called La Stampa, done by Yossi Bellin during the Oslo Accords. And I was informed of this by my late friends, Joel Bainerman and Barry Chemish. So the papacy runs Jerusalem. It's their foremost city of importance on their agenda for their Antichrist, final Pope of Rome, to rule out of a third Hebrew temple that's yet to be built there. So we read here, verse 15, "Because ye have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with hell we are at agreement. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come unto us. For we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves." So these men who rule Jerusalem have made a covenant with death. And I maintain the covenant with death is the very death of Revelation chapter 6, the fourth rider who rides a pale horse. And or I should say the rider that rides the fourth horse, because it's one rider. It's not the four horsemen of the apocalypse. It's the one horseman of the apocalypse who rides four different horses as he is described in four different ways. The fourth horse, he rides a green horse, also called a pale horse. And the man's name on it was Death. Well, this is the Antichrist. This is the beast. And so the beast, the final Pope of Rome, slain with a sword, risen from the dead, he has at the beginning of the 70th week of Daniel made a covenant with Jerusalem that's protected it. And it will establish a temporary peace. We have this here. Who's going to annul this covenant? We go on. Verse 16, "Therefore thus saith the Lord God, behold, I lay in Zion for a foundation a stone, a tried stone, a precious cornerstone, a sure foundation. He that believeth shall not make haste." Well, this is, of course, the Lord Jesus Christ. "Judgment will I also lay to the line, righteousness to the plummet, and the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies, and the water shall overflow the hiding place." Verse 18, "And your covenant with death shall be disannulled, and your agreement with hell shall not stand. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, then ye shall be trodden down by it." The overflowing scourge are the armies of the Antichrist coming into Jerusalem, robbing, raping, and pillaging, according to Zechariah chapter 12. And Zechariah 14. The overflowing scourge of Mr. Death is going to absolutely kill, rob, rape, and pillage many of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, according to Zechariah. But this covenant is going to be annulled by none other than that elect cornerstone, that foundation stone, that tried stone, that tried at Calvary. Amen. A precious cornerstone, sure foundation, he that believeth shall not be make haste. And of course, this is quoted in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 6. It's the Lord Jesus Christ. He's going to destroy this covenant. He'll bring an end to it. So therefore, the one who makes a covenant in Daniel 9:27 is not Christ. It's the beast. It's the prince that shall come. It's not Christ, for all you historicists, wrongly giving an allegorical meaning to that verse. The people of the princes will come. He shall confirm a covenant with many for 1 week. The one who confirms this covenant for many is this death. Your covenant with death of Isaiah 28. And these men who make this covenant are what Barry Chambers called the Sabbateans or the Frankists. And these are Jews, Masonic Jews, in subordination to the papacy. They're the Pope's court Jews. As Bob Dylan's mother rightly said, the Pope is the King of the Jews. Thank you, Brother Abram, for that. So the question is now, for the devil, is how do I get this revived Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem that was started in 1099, ended in 1291 when the Muslims conquered the Knights of Malta? How can we get this land of Muslim blindness and fanaticism to allow the reestablishment of the nation of Israel? How can we do that? Indeed, what must we bring to pass to reestablish the nation of Israel, which is really the reestablishment of the Pope's Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem that was run by his crusaders, particularly the Knights Templars? How can we do this? Well, first of all, the Jews of Europe are not going to voluntarily go to a desolate land run by Muslim Sunnis. It's not going to happen. So we must create a situation in Europe that will drive the remains or the remnants of the Jewish people in Europe to their land. Enter the Second 30 Years' War. From 1914 to 1945. This is the Second 30 Years' War, calculating the destruction of all Protestantism in Germany, the destruction of the Protestant Second Reich, during which the Jews were given the right to vote by Bismarck and Wilhelm I. The Jews would then be good soldiers in World War I as they were fighting for the Second Reich that was Protestant. And so we have to, first of all, disband the Second German Reich, which was Protestant. The First Reich was Catholic, the Second was Protestant, and the Third Reich, started by Hitler, would be Roman Catholic. So, how do we do this? Well, we have to have a huge world war. So we will incite World War I, and we will control the men on every side. We will control Ludendorff, Hindenburg, and Kaiser Wilhelm II. Those are the three key Jesuit coadjutors that helped facilitate World War I. We will have Nicholas II in Russia that will mobilize his troops in the East, some 800,000 of them, and justify a war by Germany against Russia. We will have a secret treaty between France, England, and Russia that if Russia is attacked, France will come to the aid and vice versa. And you can read about this in a book called The Russian Imperial Conspiracy, written by Robert Owen. It's a classic work. And so this is what happens. And World War I. What's that? It's the end of the Protestant Second Reich. And World War I. What's that? It's the end of the Habsburg Empire. We have World War I. We have the end of the Muslim Ottoman Empire. It will end formally in 1924, but during this empire, of which the Sultan is a Mason and working for the Pope, the Sultan will order his troops occupying Jerusalem to withdraw, and not a shot will be fired when General Allenby of the British enters Jerusalem as a pilgrim. He gets off his horse, says, "I will not enter Jerusalem as a conqueror, I will enter it as a pilgrim." And he was a Scottish Rite Freemason. So the high-level Freemasons working for the Pope got Jerusalem, took it from the Muslims in 1917. This will pave the way for the establishment of a Jewish state and the ultimate establishment of the nation of Israel in 1948. At this time, 1918 thereabouts, there was a Jew working for the British government named Herbert Samuel. Herbert Samuel appointed Haj Amin al-Husseini as the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, which in the minds of many of the Muslims in Jerusalem, they considered him to be a thug and a hood, a troublemaker. Why would a Masonic Jew working for the King of England appoint a thug as the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem? To start or to continue the agitation? There must be a ceaseless agitation between the Jews of Jerusalem and the Jews of Israel with the Arabs, Muslims of Jerusalem and the Arab Muslims of Israel. That can be a never-ending, ceaseless agitation. It cannot be allowed to be resolved. The papacy will raise up another group called the Muslim Brotherhood, and they will make sure that that agitation continues. The Muslim Brotherhood, when Anwar Sadat sought to established peace relations with Israel, assassinated Anwar Sadat during a military parade in the 1980s because Sadat of Egypt dared to establish some sort of peaceable relationship with the government of Israel, which is not allowed to happen by the papacy. You have Yitzhak Rabin, who seeks to have a peaceful relationship with the Muslims, and he seeks to have Jerusalem the capital of Israel. And so because of his efforts for that, they're going to assassinate him with the Israeli Secret Service, with Shin Bet. Anybody that comes to power, whether in Israel or in Egypt or in any other place there in the region, that doesn't continue the agitation must be removed from power either by disgrace or by assassination. So, I want you to see that the government of Israel works for the Pope, that the government of Egypt works for the Pope, that the government of Syria works for the Pope, that the government of Jordan works for the Pope, that the government of Lebanon works for the Pope, and all these governments, all these men occupying these places of power are overseen by the Pope's international intelligence community, which includes Mossad, German BND, American CIA, FBI, Russian FSB, SVR, British MI5, MI6, Pakistani SIS. All these intelligence communities work together. And they worked together during World War II. It's at this time now that the Pope will begin to perfect his international intelligence community during World War II. Well, you have Israel is established as a Jewish state, 1918, thereabouts. And still, the Jews are not coming there. So what they do is they have to incite anti-Jewish fury in Europe and in Eastern Europe to get the people to aid the SS in rounding up the Jews and killing them and throwing them in pits and then burying them. There's a special on Netflix about this. A professor, white guy, that's a professor, I believe, at Oxford, shows that the people involved in the Eastern Holocaust of the Jews did so willingly, that they were helping the SS do it. Question is why? Why? The answer lies in the fact that the Jesuits had concocted a forgery by the name of the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. And this the Jesuits had put together in France. They got it into Russia. And then it started to circulate there as it being the font of the horrible, terrible, bloody, and wicked Bolshevik Revolution that on its face looked Jewish, but in fact it was run by the Jesuits as the Bolshevists Lenin and Stalin readmitted the Jesuits into Russia in 1922 after they had been expelled from Russia for over 100 years by Tsar Alexander I. So now, this Bolshevik revolution, these Bolsheviks, you read Hitler's Mein Kampf, the unabridged edition. Straight away, because Hitler never wrote that, it was the Jesuit Jerome Stamfel who wrote that, a priest. He tells you that it's the Jews behind the Bolsheviks that are doing this. So Bolshevik, the term Bolshevik was a synonymous term for communist Jew. And so everybody in Europe, especially after they now had Mein Kampf, they also had the protocols. Now they're ready to blame the Jews for all the horrible atrocities that the Bolsheviks would commit. That would also include the massacres, the Katyn massacre in the forest of Katyn, where they would kill thousands of Russian and Polish men, shoot them in the back of the head, and blame the Germans for it, when in fact it was done by the Russian Soviet NKVD that was filled with Jews, because we have to make the NKVD look like it's Jew run. So this whole fanaticism now that the Jews are behind the Bolshevik Revolution, is fed with the two major works, The Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, which I show in my book, was written by the Jesuit order according to the former Roman Catholic priest Leo Lehmann when he wrote Behind the Dictators, and that Mein Kampf was written by priests. It was never written by Hitler. If you ever read the work, it's a very, very erudite work. It goes into the history of Japan and other nations. And so now Europe is brainwashed to believe that it's all the Jews, and FDR loads his administration with some 70 Jews or so to make it look to Germany like the Jews are running America. To make it look to the Muslims who would side with Nazi Germany that the Jews are running America. And the Muslims to this day, the Sunni Muslims to this day believe the Jews run America. Not considering the fact that even though there are hundreds of them in places of power, they're all, for the most part, connected to the Council on Foreign Relations, overseen by the Archbishop of New York City, whom the Pope John Paul II called the Archbishop of the Political Capital of the World. Yep. The political capital of the world is in New York, overseen by the Archbishop there. The military capital of the world is in Washington, District of Catholics, overseen by the Archbishop there. You have Georgetown overseeing the Washington Archbishop. You have Fordham overseeing the New York Archbishop. These two most powerful cities in governing the world and enforcing Jesuit foreign policy and wars and annihilations at the hands of American people not knowing that we're being used by the Jesuits and their Pentagon, which Pentagon was built by Knight of Malta John McShane out of Philadelphia. So to do this, all of these men have to work in sync. They have to work together during World War II, after the Bolshevik Revolution, after the First World War, to work together for the annihilation not only of the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants of Europe that always protected the Jews and gave them liberties there. And remember, Luther never wrote on the Jews and their lies. I can prove it. It's a treatise I have for $500. I'm not going to give it away. Because they blame the Lutherans for the Holocaust. They blame Luther for the Holocaust. And he was never involved in that. And I show you from the works of Nicholas Lenker how Luther believed in a restoration of Israel under her Messiah. It's in Volume 1. And the one who put out this lie that Luther wrote on the Jews and their lies was none other than that Roman Catholic Rhinelander trained by Jesuits, whose name was Joseph Goebbels, the minister of propaganda, who had his group of prostitutes, and he forced one American woman to be his prostitute. And there's a special on him, on this woman, accused of treason, and Al Pacino is her attorney. And Joseph Goebbels regularly seduced her, regularly raped her. He was a wicked, demon-possessed Jesuit-motivated minister of propaganda. And it's Joseph Goebbels who's the first to bring out an original copy of On the Jews and Their Lies. Because there was no original copy ever, because it was never published in the 1500s or the 1600s or the 1700s or the early 1800s. It doesn't exist. It's all propaganda of the Jesuits in arming them with this propaganda to make the Lutherans feel like they're responsible for the Holocaust when they're not, generally. Although the leaders departed from the Luther Bible and the church became apostate. Just like it is here in America. So, what do we have? We have the Jesuits are priming the pump with the propaganda that the Jews are the real Bolsheviks. And that when Hitler comes to power, he will march into Russia and he will free the people from Bolshevik domination. Oh, really? Is that what he did? Really? Because Hitler and Stalin will work together. That's why I have a book called Military Intelligence Blunders. And in that particular book, it shows that every time Stalin was warned that the German army was amassing on the Russian border with 3,000 tanks and tens of 3 million men, that they're going to invade Russia, every time some spy came and told Stalin that, he had them executed. Stalin was providing fuel and grain to the invading German army that was about ready to invade, and he provided them fuel and grain to the day before they invaded. Why is that? Because Stalin and Hitler worked together for the Jesuits. And the purpose of the invasion of Operation Barbarossa, named after the Third Crusader, who was German, was to send the Nazi army into Russia. They would be greeted by the people with grain and salt, thinking that they were going to be liberated from Stalin. When Martin Bormann was told the officers there to victimize and brutalize the Russian people and the Ukrainian people, told the SS to do that, to turn them against the invading German army that was supposed to liberate them from Stalin. So, what happens? The German army invades, and as they take land, the four Einsatzgruppens, SS Einsatzgruppens, commanded by criminals, start their annihilation of every Jewish community they can find. That was the real purpose for Operation Barbarossa, not to take Moscow, because I met an SS man many years ago. His name was Freddy. He came over here. And I said, well, tell me about invading Operation Boba. He said, we were 18 kilometers from Moscow. We had chickens strapped to our belts. And we got the order we had to go south. And we were not allowed to take Moscow in the winter when we should have. He's right. That's exactly what happened. So the purpose was to sacrifice the German army there, which was full of Lutheran Protestants. The purpose was also to cause it to surrender with von Paulus. There were 91,000 prisoners would go into Russia and only 5,000 would return. Most all of them were Roman Catholics. And then also to annihilate the Jews of Eastern Russia and Eastern Europe. That Stalin and Hitler and FDR and Churchill would work together to this end. This is why Sumner Wells, who was in the administration of FDR, refused to bomb the singular set of tracks to Auschwitz when it could have been easily done. FDR, Churchill, Stalin, and Hitler all worked together under Jesuit direction. Okay? So, of the many purposes for World War II, which includes the ultimate destruction of the white German people and the bastardization of their race by forced occupation of Germany with black American soldiers and black French soldiers and black English soldiers constantly copulating with these German women to raise up all these bastards, these half-breed mulatto bastards in Germany so that there is no Germany anymore. There can't be any white-raced people that are Protestant reading the Luther Bible anymore. They're the greatest threat to the papacy. So let's advocate racial miscegenation. And anybody against that's got to be a sexist and a racist and a bigot, which is I'm branded as that because I'm against miscegenation. It's unbiblical. For the bastardization of the white races in England, Canada, America, Germany, Netherlands, all the South Africa, all the historic white Protestant nations. And that was another purpose for the occupying army in Germany for 45 years or so, and it's still there. So, with that end of the 30 Years' War, 1945, where over 6 million Jews were murdered, probably more like 7. Anybody who denies you the Eurasian Jewish Holocaust has no idea of the Jesuit power and who they controlled and their ability to cover up the facts and to bury these millions of peoples in trenches all throughout the Eastern European, Eastern in Russia and Eastern Europe. So, what's the result of this? It instills in the surviving Jews in Europe to go to either the United States or go to Israel. And many of them start to go to Israel. Israel will then be, it's a Jewish state. 1948, 3 years after the war, it will be proclaimed a nation. And who will proclaim it a nation? It will be proclaimed a nation by David Ben-Gurion. David Ben-Gurion was a Masonic Jewish labor Zionist. And he was busy working for the Pope because it's David Ben-Gurion who will appoint to his cabinet a treacherous Jew by the name of Rudolf Kassner. Rudolf Kassner and Adolf Eichmann, SS Colonel Adolf Eichmann and SS Colonel Kurt Becker will work together to send 400,000 Hungarian Jews to Auschwitz. And this is covered in a book written by Hollywood playwright Ben Hecht, he was a Jew, H-E-C-H-T, and the name of the book is Perfidy. There are three classic works you want to get on this topic. They are as follows. The first book you want to get, and this was pointed out to me by my old deceased friend Barry Chamish, The Transfer Agreement, The Dramatic Story of the Pact Between the Third Reich and Jewish Palestine by Edwin Black. A classic, because the labor Zionists running Jewish Palestine were working for the Pope because it's the Jesuits in control of the British Empire that would appoint these men to power, just like they would appoint other Muslims, appoint Muslims to power. They would put Hajiman, they would put the first president, the first king of Saudi Arabia in power in 1932, when they create the Saudi kingdom. So it's been Saud, the House of Saud, put in power by the Jesuits through the British. So this pact between Jewish Palestine and the Third Reich was that they would only allow so many Jews to enter Palestine. And the rest, the Masonic Jewish labor Zionists would aid the Nazis in getting them to the camps, and to the specifically the death camps in Poland, which Stalin donated some 20,000 prisoners to help build the place. So, that's the first book. The second book is called, as I mentioned, Perfidy by Ben Hecht. It shows you that these labor Zionists work with the Nazis, that these labor Zionists were the enemies of the Irgun, of which I would have been a member, and that, these labor Zionists, they were enemies of the Irgun, of which I would have been a member, and they were backing Haganah. Haganah today is Mossad. Mossad was created by the German BND, according to Loftus's work, The Secret War Against the Jews. Reinhard Gehlen, that Nazi who was given a place here in America after the war, helped to establish the Israeli Mossad, just like Otto Skorzeny, another SS high-level Nazi, one of Hitler's favorite Nazis, he will also in turn be involved in aiding and abetting and establishing Mossad. That's a fact. So this is Ben Heck. The next one's called The Scared and the Doomed, The Jewish Establishment versus the 6 Million. So it's the Jewish establishment in America that versus the 6 Million that were murdered. And this book shows you that Rabbi Stephen Weiss, a Reformed Jewish rabbi, didn't want to allow the Jews to enter America during the war, and he was greatly influential in FDR to do that. Franklin Dandable Roosevelt, the dictator, the constitutional dictator that imposed military government on March 9, 1933 here. He's one of the foremost movers and shakers of starting World War II because he was involved in the Pearl Harbor attack. Read the book, Day of Deceit. Day of Deceit. The Office of Naval Intelligence and FDR and others were involved in facilitating a successful Japanese attack in Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. It's this same FDR working with Stephen Weiss who will not allow a Jewish immigration into the United States seeking to escape Europe. Book again, Scared and the Doomed, The Jewish Establishment Here in America versus the 6 Million by M.J. Nuremberger. N-U-R-E-M-B-E-R-G-R. M.J. Nuremberger. And then there's another classic work that you must have for your library, because freemen have libraries. Freemen don't watch TV, unless it's a documentary or some sort of perverted news, you want to see what's being said. Freemen have libraries, they read books, and they understand what's going on, and they talk about it, and they resist the typical zeitgeist, the spirit of the age, which is all papal lies. We have The Popes Against the Jews, The Vatican's Role in the Rise of Modern Anti-Semitism by David Kurtzer. David I. Kurtzer. This is a classic work. You must have it. So, World War II accomplished some great feats for the Jesuits. Because the Jesuits, remember, are the revived Knights Templars. Loyola himself, who was not a Jew, he was a Spanish Aragon Templar, and he revives the Knights Templars that had been suppressed by the Pope in 1312, by Pope Clement V, and they're today known as the Society of Jesus, or the Military Company of the Society of Jesus. So now, they established their revived Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem in 1948. David Ben-Gurion, it leads the way. 11 minutes after the proclamation of Israeli independence, 11 minutes later, 33rd degree Freemason Harry Solomon Truman, President of the United States and military dictator of this Emergency War Powers military government imposed by FDR, his predecessor, Harry Truman will recognize the State of Israel in 11 minutes. That means all the major corporations can do business with Israel. That means, quote-unquote, aid can be given to the nation of Israel. And remember, during a civilian government, aid is not to be given. Under this military government, they can do anything they want to. And remember, they have three times the aid going to Arab countries. It's $3 billion in Israel. It's $9 billion to the Arab countries, at least. So, Harry Truman recognizes Israel in 11 minutes. Churchill will do the same shortly thereafter. Stalin will do the same about 6 months later. What does Churchill and Stalin and Truman all have in common? According to the book The Deadly Deception by Jim Shaw, he says all of those three at Potsdam were all Freemasons. These are the Knights Templars, the foot soldiers of the Jesuit order, setting up the revived Latin Kingdom of Jerusalem in 1948. And if that's the case, you can know this. The Jewish people have no representation in their country. The government of Israel is against them. Everything it does is against them. The government of Israel, the Pope's government of Israel, creates anti-Jewish fury everywhere it goes. Here's another classic example of that. The attack on the USS Liberty in 1967. That's the Pope's Masonic Jewish Labor Zionist government, given the go-ahead by Lyndon Bastard Johnson, Lyndon Baines Johnson, and the CIA at that time run by Richard Helms, who agreed that Clay Shaw was an agent for the CIA at the time of the Kennedy assassination, in which that Irish Catholic judge, James Haggerty, in the trial of Clay Shaw in New Orleans in 1969, deliberately covered up evidence that Clay Shaw used the name of Clay Bertrand, the alias of Clay Bertrand. So that Irish Catholic judge made sure that Clay Shaw would not get convicted. This is the power of the Jesuits in New Orleans, from their Loyola University in New Orleans. So continuing on here now, we have the Masonic Jewish Labor Zionists put in power by the Gentile Freemasons, ruling Jerusalem. The Gentiles have always ruled Jerusalem, according to Christ. Till the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled, Gentiles will trod down Jerusalem. In the book of Luke, we read that, like Luke chapter 22, thereabouts. So this is the establishment of the nation of Israel, and it's not for the benefit of the Jews. With the attack on the USS Liberty, many an American serviceman were furious with Israel and the Jews, and rightfully so. But the American servicemen didn't know that the Pope was behind it and his Central Intelligence Agency. And his Francis Cardinal Spellman. Spellman oversaw the assassination of Kennedy. He oversaw the attack of the USS Liberty, ordered LBJ to make that happen. And LBJ said, I want that GD ship at the bottom of the ocean. So we can blame Israel and have more anti-Jewish fury there created in America against Israel, against the people of Israel, when there should be anti-Israeli government fury here, as there should be anti-emergency war power military government fury here. Because the military government of the Pope oversees the military government of Israel. That's why the CIA oversees Mossad. And that attack on the USS Liberty would never have happened had not the Mossad or the Israeli intelligence got the okay from CIA. And you can visualize this. You can see this in a four-volume set called Sacrificing Liberty. It's a four-volume CD set, Sacrificing Liberty. It was so bad that filthy admiral, what was his name, John McCain Sr., covered it up. Of course, he's a brother Freemason. And you have another admiral that comes in, he's a Southerner, what's his name, Admiral Kidd, and he tells those men, you've not seen anything, you're not going to say anything, and if I hear anything, you're going to be court-martialed or worse. That's all in the video. Get it and watch it. Admiral Kidd, John McCain Sr., all of these guys are traitors. It's like McCain's son, John McCain Jr., the third or second, would be a traitor running for the presidency. So, that's how the nation of Israel was established. It was established by the Pope using its international intelligence community, controlling the political leaders of Israel, and they would rule not for the benefit of the Jewish people there, but for the benefit of the Pope of Rome. Now there's one more thing I want to tell you before I move on to my next topic. And the two races that the devil hates the most, the two races of people that the devil hates the most are the racial Hebrew Jewish Israelites and the half Jews known as Arabs. Abraham fathered the Arab race through Ishmael. The Arabs are half racial Jew. And the Jews come from Abraham through Sarah. So the devil hates these physical races, descendants of Abraham, and seeks to kill them as often as he can using the means that the papacy is in control of. got to kill these people. So why not just continue to incite the Arab-Israeli conflict between the pagan Jews of Israel and their pagan religion of Judaism, with their pagan god known as Hashem, with the pagan Muslims of Israel, with their pagan god of Allah, busy killing each other in the name of their false gods? And the devil loves it because he hates those races of people. How do we know this? How do we know that God has racial plans for the Jews as well as the Arabs? Let's take a look at Isaiah. We read in the book of Isaiah, chapter 19, verses 19 through 25. The context is the millennial kingdom, when Christ will be ruling on the throne of David, Israel's been restored. And we see verse 19. In that day there shall be an altar to the Lord in the midst of the land of Egypt, and a pillar at the border thereof to the Lord. Because remember, Israel will border Egypt, as it does today. And it shall be for a sign and for a witness unto the Lord of hosts in the land of Egypt. For they shall cry unto the Lord because of the oppressors, and he shall send them a Savior and a great one, and he shall deliver them. The oppressors, I maintain, are armies of the Antichrist going down there to do a great killing of the Egyptians because they're descendants of Abraham through Ishmael. We read, and the Lord shall be known to Egypt, and the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day, and shall do sacrifice and oblation. Yea, they shall vow a vow unto the Lord and perform it. This has never happened ever in history, but it will happen, and it will happen literally. And the Lord shall smite Egypt, he shall smite and heal it, and they shall return even to the Lord, and he shall be entreated of them, and shall heal them. So Egypt will be a nation in the millennial kingdom. And we also read that in Zechariah chapter 14. Egypt will be there in the millennial kingdom. If they don't go up to the Feast of the Tabernacles, the Lord's not going to send them any rain. But Egypt will be there for the millennial kingdom, that Arab nation. Verse 23. In that day, in this day of the millennial kingdom, when the Lord returns, and he is entreated by the Egyptians, in that day there shall be a highway out of Egypt to Assyria. Now this goes out of Egypt through Israel to Assyria, when Israel inherits its land promise. So that highway is going to have to travel through Israel up into Assyria. So we read, and the Egyptians shall serve with the Assyrians. Serve what? Serve Israel. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land. So Egypt is in between Syria, or Assyria, and Egypt. And there's a highway tying all three of those countries together. And Syria is Arab, and Egypt is Arab. They're half Jews, descendants of Abraham through Ishmael. In that day shall Israel be the third with Egypt and with Assyria, even a blessing in the midst of the land, whom the Lord of hosts shall bless, saying, blessed be Egypt, my people. Blessed be Egypt, my people. And Assyria, that's up in Syria, the work of my hands. Syria? The work of my hands? And Israel, mine inheritance. This is the restoration of Egypt, Israel, and Syria, or Assyria, in the millennial kingdom. What are the Syrians and the Egyptians? They are Arabs. They are descendants of Abraham through Ishmael. What are the Jews? They are descendants of Abraham through Sarah, through Isaac, Rebecca. So, the devil loves to kill the Arabs and the Jews. That's why you have the ceaseless Arab-Israeli conflict. And by the way, that's why you have the ceaseless war on the Arabs by Washington in Iraq, because they're Arabs. They're Arab Muslims. And so as many of them as we can kill, we want to kill, no matter how, kill men, women, and children, because there's some filthy Arabs. The devil hates the Arabs. And so just get the U.S. military government in there with its high-tech military to do the crusades for the Pope against the enemies of the nation of Israel, because the Pope is not going to allow the nation of Israel to be destroyed. He will never allow that, and he will use the extreme weapons of this country, of this empire, to prevent that. Barry Chambers and I, we used to get an argument periodically about that. Here's the end of Israel. I said, Barry, Israel's not ended. Oh, yes, it is. They're going to destroy it. Look what they're doing to Gaza. Well, they're not going to end it, Barry. That's just an agitation. And he wrote his great book called Bye Bye Gaza. I'll cover that in my next broadcast. Israel is the revived Latin kingdom of Jerusalem. It has the foremost intelligence operation, one of them in the world. It's overseen by the CIA and the British and the Germans, and they help out Mossad to make sure enemies will not come to power to destroy the leaders of Israel. They can kill the people, but not the leaders. So we'll have the Black September in Munich, and we'll kill a bunch of Israeli soldiers, a bunch of Israeli athletes. Oh, by the way, the Mossad will kill every last one of those Arab Muslims. I don't call them Palestinians. There's no such thing as a Palestinian. That's nonsense. There was never a nation called Palestine settled by Arabs. Never. It never has, doesn't have a history. That's all an agitation by Jesuit-controlled Yasser Arafat. Thank God he's gone and gone to hell now, and he's suffering in that fire waiting for the great white throne judgment. And he had over $1 billion when he died. He was just the agent of the Jesuits. He went and spoke at the CFR right along with Perez. And those Jewish coadjutors for the Jesuits, all working together to keep the agitation going, no matter how many Jews must die, no matter how many Arabs must die. But we have to keep Israel in place, and we have to keep Jerusalem in the hands of the Jews, because it's Jerusalem that's going to be building the third Hebrew temple, and that would never be allowed to happen if it's in the hands of the Muslims, because there are Muslim mosques there. There's the Dome of the Rock, there's the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They have to go, they have to be destroyed. I maintain that's exactly what they're going to be doing in this war. But just to show you that the Muslim leaders, as Haj Ibn al-Husseini, perceived that the Jewish Zionists were planning on building the third Hebrew temple, I want you to hear this in Days of Our Years from Pierre Van Passen. We read the Days of Our Years by Pierre Van Passen, who was a World War II correspondent. He was from the Netherlands with a historic Dutch Reformed history, but he was a socialist. But he writes this very key work that we all have to have for our libraries. It's called Days of Our Years. It's in the chapter After Seven Centuries. And this is Seven Centuries of Muslim Rule, page 365. We read, "What seems more credible to me," I said, "is that Your Eminence should think that the English are ever going to go home, or that the Zionists will give up their plan for redeeming the land of Israel." Unquote. Quote, "There will be no peace in this country until they go," unquote, declared the Mufti. Now this is the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Haj Ibn al-Husseini, who is considered to be a thug by the Muslim people in Jerusalem at this time. In the English, we recognize our real enemies. It is the British government and not the Jews who have foisted the scandalous Balfour Declaration on us. The Mufti's right. But the English are run by the Jesuits. The Jesuits foisted the Balfour Declaration on us, on the Mufti. It is Ramsay MacDonald who has misrepresented the situation in this holy land in his book Palestine. We have clearly shown the world our attitude in this issue, and we are determined to fight it out to the end, unquote, he added. Quote, "The British, we will have to put a soldier with a bayonet in front of every Jewish home if they want peace without a wholesale exodus of the Jews. Our people are at the end of their patience. They cannot bear the sight of the Jews any longer," unquote. Quote, The outbreaks are to be taken then as an organized attempt on the part of the Arabs under the leadership of Your Eminence to thwart the establishment of a Jewish national home in Palestine," unquote, I asked. Now remember, this is the same Haj Ibn al-Husseini who was a guest in Berlin of Adolf Hitler for 4 years 1941 to 1945, as his Handschar division of the SS was busy robbing, raping, pillaging, and torturing the Orthodox Serbs, as well as Jews. So we read, Haman was on the point of replying to this question when Jamil stayed him. The two cousins exchanged a few remarks in Arabic. At the end of their consultation, Jamal informed me that His Eminence was going to furnish me with a written decoration at the close of the audience. I was now asked to honor him by accepting a cup of coffee. The quote-unquote Grand Mufti was toying with a gold box of cigarettes. He eyed me from the side, but when I turned my head and looked him in the face, he smiled, the same candid baby smile he had worn when I entered. He asked me to step over to the window to take a look at the garden where a black servant in a white gown arranged the trays on the low table of carved ivory. The whole marvelous scene lay at my feet. In the clear light, the immense garden seemed almost unreal, a frame on which God had embroidered the world. Ulamas were strolling around in the popular lanes, and their disciples reposed in little groups in the shade of the palms. That doesn't make sense. Ulamas were strolling around in the poplar lanes with their disciples, or reposed in little groups in the shade of the plains, palms. Believers were washing their hands and feet at the fountains. By the way, I was there once, and all the Muslims would take off their shoes, they wash their feet at the fountains, it smells like dirty feet. The sun had imposed a golden luster on the octer facades of the kiosks. Above the treetops, against the incense blue of the Judean hills, I could see the gleaming porcelain dome of the great Byzantine mosque with its challenging inscription, quote, "Remember, Muslims, God has no son." That is what is written in Arabic on the Dome of the Rock, on the Temple Mount. "Remember, Muslims, God has no son." So this makes Sunni Islam, that runs this at this time, just as blasphemous as Orthodox Judaism. Two religions of Satan, both denying the Lord Jesus Christ, that he was indeed the Son of God, as well as God manifest in the flesh. And this is the spirit of Antichrist, as we read in 1 John chapter 4. Now we go on. Quote, "That is the sanctuary," said the grand, quote-unquote, Mufti at my elbow. Quote, "The Jews want to tear down." "That is the sanctuary," said the grand Mufti at my elbow, "that the Jews want to tear down. Here they plan to rebuild the Temple of Solomon." Now this is written in 1939. I think I might have the 1941 edition. There's nothing new about the fact that the Temple of Solomon is going to be built, has been planned on being built by the Muslims for at least 100 years, probably more like 200. Pira Van Passen says, "Do they?" I asked in surprise. "I have never heard of that," unquote. Quote, "Oh, but that is common knowledge," unquote, His Eminence nodded, and stepping over to a small Louis XVI secretaire, he drew out a sheet of paper and read, quote, "Lord Melchett declared that he will consecrate the remainder of his life to rebuild the Jewish temple," unquote. "And here is something else," added the Grand Mufti. "Professor Einstein believes that Palestine without the temple is to the Jews like a body without a head. Do you see the real aims of these Jews? They want to destroy this mosque." Well, by the way, who was the advisor of Einstein? His name was he was a Jesuit. Georges Lamache, I believe. That's how you say his last name. A Jesuit was a private advisor of Albert Einstein. And this Jesuit most assuredly wants the building of the third temple, because that's what the Jesuits have always advocated. Georges Lemaître, that's him, the advisor to Albert Einstein. And Albert Einstein probably got a lot of his physics from the Jesuits, who were the masters of physics during that day, who had already detonated atomic bombs in Russia, in Siberia, in Tunguska. So the Jesuits, using Einstein, advocated the building of a third Hebrew temple. And if that's to happen, there's got to be war in Israel. There has to be the destruction of those mosques. And the destruction of those mosques has to be blamed on the Americans. And that's why they put a huge American base in Israel that Barry Chambers talks about. And I'll tell you about it in my next broadcast. So, in conclusion, for Israel to be established, there had to be the Eurasian Jewish Holocaust, and there were many top Jews, Masonic Jews, advocating and promoting it. One of them who refused to promote it was Vladimir Jabotinsky, and there's a two-volume set on him called The Lone Wolf, and as a result, he's going to escape to Hunter, New York, and there he's going to be poisoned, because we had to have these Jews killed off in Poland out of the Pale of Settlement established by Catherine the Great and Frederick the Great, and once we get them killed out of there, then we can have a Europe that's going to be Catholic, and the rest, whatever survived, can go to Israel for their final attempt at annihilation by the Antichrist. Okay, this concludes our second half of our second of third broadcast on this topic. Our last broadcast will be probably somewhat shorter. And Brother Eric John Phelps, 24/7 World Radio, appreciate your donations. You can send it Zelle to Eric, E-R-I-C, John, J-O-N, Phelps, P-H-E-L-P-S, at 484-238-5200. So, we'll be back in a moment with our final section today on this tremendous topic of Gaza, the rights of the Jews to their land, the government of Israel working against them, working for the Pope, killing Jewish people and killing Arab people to the delight of Satan's papacy. But in the end, we're going to cover now how I believe they have incited this huge war in Gaza that will bring about the end of the destruction of the mosques and justification to build the Hebrew temple, with the blame of the destroying of the mosque to be placed on America, the great Satan. Back in a minute. Brother Eric John Phelps, 24/7 World Radio, on this January the 4th, 2024.